Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora koutou. Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air. I'm David, I'm an alcoholic and the host of today's meeting, brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Today's guests are meant to be from the Wednesday As Bill Sees It group, and we're wondering where they are. One of them has turned up. This is Dan, who many of you will remember was the host of this program for at least 12 years. And thank you, Dan, for being here. Maybe you could introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Welcome, Dan. We open each meeting here, and as we do with AA meetings generally, with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me with that. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, as Dan is here, we'll ask Dan to read the... no, we won't. I shall read the preamble.
Yeah,
we're short of people here today, so I'll read the preamble. Kia ora. Again, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and this is the preamble which we start meetings with. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And this is just to welcome you again. This is the Wellington Saturday Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And you're listening to it to this on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. If you would like to contact Alcoholics Anonymous, you can at any time, 7 days a week, call our 0800 number, which is 0800-229-6757. That's 0800-229-6757. And there's a website which is extremely handy for finding meetings and all kinds of other information about AA. That's aa.org.nz. So that's aa.org.nz. And now we are going to ask, I'm going to ask Dan to read how it works.
Sure. Thanks, David. I'm Dan, still an alcoholic. And how it works, from this is from chapter 5 of the big book, which is the book called Alcoholics Anonymous. So here it goes. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. That was step one. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people, wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thanks, Dan. And I've gone and looked outside to see if any of the other guests who said they were coming here today were there, but there's no sign of anybody. So you might have to just have the two of us today, but we'll do our best. In the meantime, as I said, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to read from the Daily Reflections for today, which is Saturday, January the 10th. And that's United We Stand. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. And that's taken from Alcoholics Anonymous, the Big Book, page 30. And the Daily Reflections for this date goes on to say, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I was no longer able to control my drinking. It was either my wife's complaining about my drinking, or maybe the sheriff forced me to go to AA meetings, or perhaps I knew, deep down inside, that I couldn't drink like others, but I was unwilling to admit it because the alternative terrified me. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women united against a common, fatal disease. Each one of our lives is linked to every other, much like the survivors on a life raft at sea. If we all work together, we can get safely to shore. Now, good morning. This is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and it's coming to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And this morning we have as our guest here Dan from the Wellington Wednesday As Bill Sees It group. And as I mentioned before, Dan, of course, hosted this meeting for 12 long years, so he knows a lot more about it than I do. Now, in the absence of our other guests arriving so far, I think Dan was going also to do us a reading from As Bill Sees It, which is the book, of course, that the As Bill Sees It group is named after. So take it away, Dan.
Sure, thanks, David. Yeah, I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic, and my home group is As Bill Sees It, has been mentioned. So that's a meeting on Wednesday nights at 5:30 at Toi Ponaki Arts Centre in Wellington, in the area of Te Aro. And it's a great meeting. That's why it's my home group, and we normally have plenty of really good chocolate biscuits, and then we all go for dinner afterwards. It's become the highlight of my week to go to that meeting, and because it's my home group, it means that if I'm in Wellington, I always get to that group. So the only time I don't get there is if I'm out of Wellington. So how that meeting works is that the chairperson for that meeting chooses a reading from the book As Bill Sees It, which is some of the writings from Bill W., one of AA's founders, and then that reading is a suggested theme for the meeting. So it's nice to have a different reading every week and a different theme. So I've chosen a reading today, and it's from, if you've got the As Bill Sees It book, it's number 14. It's called Newcomer Problems. So the reading goes, "The temptation is to become rather possessive of newcomers. Perhaps we try to give them advice about their affairs, which we aren't really competent to give, or ought not to give at all. Then we are hurt and confused when the advice is rejected, or when it is accepted and brings still greater confusion." And that's from the 12 and 12, page 111. And there's a second reading on that page. It's called, "You can't make a horse drink water if he still prefers beer or is too crazy to know what he does want. Set a pail of water beside him, tell him how good it is and why, and leave him alone. If people really want to get drunk, there is, so far as I know, no way of stopping this. So leave them alone and let them get drunk. But don't exclude them from the water pail either." And that's from a letter from 1942. There we go.
Thanks, Dan. And kia ora koutou, this is, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm your host for this meeting of the Wellington AA meeting on air. And I am going to, before we have any of the usual sharing we have at meetings, I'm going to read a few paragraphs out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and out of chapter 3, which is more about alcoholism. This was a fascinating book, the big book. A lot of it was, you know, really written, you know, 60, 70 years ago now. And the science of alcoholism was pretty much established by Alcoholics Anonymous, because, alcoholics were just seen as people who had lost their way through being unable to hold their alcohol. They eventually went mad and were locked up. And, there were hospitals that looked after them, which are described in the big book. And Bill W. and his friend Bob, came to a meeting in Akron in Ohio in almost exactly 90 years ago now, and got the basis of Alcoholics Anonymous. But they wrote, this book was written up, and it's in multiple editions now, but it's interesting to read how, what was thought about alcoholism at the time, because a lot of it still holds well now. So this is the beginning of chapter 3. Anyway, more about alcoholism from the big book, page 39 and no, sorry, page 30 and 31. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man and woman that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period of time, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make all alcoholics of our kind like others. Like other normal people. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't yet done so. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove to themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. And that's from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism, on pages 30 and 31. So there's many interesting chapters in this book that, really set out, much wisdom and background and history and science to alcoholism, and certainly the business about being a progressive illness, because, most of the alcoholics who come to AA have found that over the time they just drink more and more just to get the same feelings of normality out of it, and you can't and an ability just to stop and then have one drink the way most people can. Anyway, this is the Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And if you want to contact AA to make inquiries about it, or to find out where a local meeting might be, or to just to get some help, please just ring 7 days a week on 0800 229 6757. That's 0800 229 6757. And AA has a fabulous website with all kinds of information about alcoholism and AA, and where you can find a meeting near you on any day of the week. Go to aa.org.nz. Now, as this is a meeting on air, and I'm going to now ask Dan if he would like to share his story for a time.
Oh, no, I'll pass, thanks. No, I'm just joking, David. I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dan.
And yeah, it's great to be at the live meeting on air, and it's nice to be on the other side of the desk for once after spending many years on your side, David. But the reading that we read out before, I've done a few readings, and just to let people know that that we're doing a few more readings than we normally would, and AA meetings aren't normally about doing heaps of readings. Normally there might be one or two at the beginning, and then most of the meeting is about sharing for those people that haven't been to a meeting before. So this is the kind of sharing bit. So for me, step one, admitting I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. Now, when I first went to to an AA meeting. I was about 20 years old, and I was going because people were keeping an eye on me, and I wanted to look good in front of everybody and show that I was trying to do the right thing, and look at me, I'm dealing with my problems. I was also going to church, and I was going to all sorts of other sort of self-help type things to try and show everyone, look at me, I'm doing really well now, I'm addressing my problems. Now, when I was in the meetings, I heard lots of stories about, you know, people that had got into trouble through drinking and had recovered, and I kind of related to a lot of the stories that they told about themselves and, you know, the trouble they got themselves into, and how when they started to drink, they couldn't stop. Well, they could stop sometimes, but they could never predict when they could. And I kind of related to that because, you know, I would have the odd night where I'd go out and have 4 or 5, 6 drinks and come home at midnight and say, well, that was a great night. And that would happen maybe once every 6 months or once a year. And, you know, the other 52 weeks of the year, I'd be out and I wouldn't know when I'd come home. I wouldn't know when I'd stop drinking. It was basically, it wasn't up to me. It was, you know, I'd go out and just end up in situations with people I wouldn't normally hang out with, do things I wouldn't normally do. A lot of them were embarrassing and not very, you know, moral, I suppose, as well. And some of the stuff involved me getting into trouble, like, you know, legal trouble as well. And so eventually this stuff started to catch up with me. But it wasn't enough to stop me drinking, because for me, you know, drinking was the most fun I could have. And everything that I did was better with a few drinks. I couldn't imagine going to like a barbecue or a friend's house or a party without having plenty of alcohol there. Even going to the movies was better having a few drinks before and even during the movie. Basically, if there was an event that involved drinking, I'd be there. The Wellington Sevens, which was a big rugby tournament, I used to love that because that was the day people would dress up and drink a lot. St. Patrick's Day as well, the same thing. People would dress up and drink a lot. And it's a great place for a proper alcoholic to hide in amongst all these people that were just having one day of revelry. But for me, it was just like the biggest excuse ever just to get drunk and behave badly, you know. My favourite drinks were free ones. I'd drink pretty much anything, and especially if I didn't have to pay for them. Towards the end, I was even actually going to bars and stealing drinks off people's tables because I'd spent all my money, and I needed to get drunk, and so I just had to keep drinking, and that was the only way that I could do it. So yeah, but you know, so getting back to step one, I sort of stumbled into AA again after, you know, I was 20 when I went to a few meetings, and then when I was 36 years old, I carried on drinking for another, you know, like I stopped for a brief time when I was 20, but you know, carried on, and because I wasn't honest, you know, even though I related to the stories, I didn't really, you know, I wasn't willing to stop. And even though I said I was, I was sitting there in front of all these other alcoholics saying, yep, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I don't want to drink again, and I'm going to keep going to meetings, I'm going to keep doing this, but never any intention of doing that. And as soon as people weren't watching me anymore, I was off, and I was, you know, back drinking again, the same as before, and it just kind of just got worse. And I got into more trouble. But it wasn't enough to stop me. And I knew through my 20s and my early 30s that my drinking was out of control. And I knew that if I had to look at it, I might actually have to stop altogether. And that's what kept me out of the rooms of AA for so long, because I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to even consider that I might have to stop altogether. I didn't really want to cut down either. Just, you know, that was mentioned before about people that just have one or two drinks. I didn't see the point of that. I remember being in restaurants with friends, and some people would have a glass of wine with their meal, and they'd pour themselves a second glass, they'd get halfway through it, and then the end of the meal would come and they'd get up and be ready to leave, leaving a half a glass of wine. And I was like, it baffled me. I mean, like, I'd be the one to make sure that if there's any dregs left behind in the bottles, or, you know, like a half a glass or left, I'd make sure that it got drunk before we left, because I didn't want to waste any alcohol, this precious liquid. But not everyone else was, you know, not everyone was like that. But that's something that I realised differentiated me from other people. I didn't see it at the time. I didn't see myself as being any different. I just thought I was just drinking the same as everybody else. I was just the party guy, you know, the fun party Dan. And that became part of my persona and my personality. Like, I'd be the guy that would turn up to parties and bars and be loud and be fun. And, you know, everyone else would have a great time because I was there. And that wasn't actually the case. I noticed as time went on that, like, I'd be getting drunker and drunker. I'd notice people actually, rather than being drawn towards me, they'd be moving away from me. And, you know, I'd talk to people and they'd be backing away, physically trying to get away, because I'd just be so loud, obnoxious, not making any sense, invading people's personal space, that type of thing. But again, I just thought it was fine because it was my personality and my persona. So yeah, I didn't see any reason to stop until I stumbled into the rooms of AA again at the age of 36. And I sort of caught myself at a bit of a weak moment after three nights in a row of really heavy drinking. And after the third night, I woke up still drunk and rang the 0800 number, the one that David mentioned earlier. And someone answered, this is on a Sunday morning, and they said, oh, there's a meeting on at Trades Hall, which was only about 5 minutes walk from where I was living at the time. And so I staggered in there at 11 o'clock in the morning, still drunk from the night before, and they even asked me to share. So I shared, and I can't remember what I said, but I had a big cry as well. I was feeling very sorry for myself. And I, you know, breathed alcohol fumes over everybody. And at the end of the meeting, they basically asked me to keep coming back. And so I did. I got a paper meetings list, and I started going to meetings. And I went to quite a few in Wellington. And I found some I liked and some I didn't like. So I found three of them that I liked and just kept going to those ones and didn't go back to the other ones. And I wasn't quite sure what I was after, but I was pretty sure I didn't want what I had anymore. I didn't want to drink like I had, and I didn't want just to feel as bad as I had, because, yeah, like I was just in a bad way. And it wasn't long before after one of the meetings, it was actually after one of the Asbel Caesar meetings on a Wednesday, and we're all out for dinner. And one of the guys who'd been around for a while, he asked me, have you got a sponsor? And I said, no, because I was looking around to try and find a cool sponsor. And this guy wasn't necessarily he wasn't on my radar as being one of the cool guys. But he said, tell you what, I'll be your temporary sponsor. And I felt like I couldn't say no, so I said yes. And then within a few days, he rang me up and said, do you know this other guy? And I said, yeah, yep. He's another kind of musician type guy. So we had that in common. He said, yeah, yep. He said, would you like him to be your sponsor? And I said, yeah, okay. And he said, oh, that's good, because I've already asked him, and he said yes. And then I had I had my own sponsor. So I had, what I had then is like a one-on-one, basically like a tour guide through AA, someone to spend time with me one-on-one to help me work through the steps and also answer any stupid questions I had about AA, about, you know, how it works and what to do and why people said this and what's involved in service, all these different things. I had someone to ask, and it was incredibly helpful. And so, over the time, I've had a few different sponsors, and the reason I got I left my first one is because he actually picked up a drink again. And so, yeah. But what I did is just you know, carried on myself and just chose another sponsor. And I chose a sponsor I was a little bit scared of because I thought that's what I needed at the time. And one of the things he got me to do as part of step one was write down all the ways that my life was unmanageable and put it down into categories like work, family, financial, physical. And so I was able to write down three or four examples under each category as to how my life was unmanageable. And that took up two or three pages of writing. And so I was able to look at that afterwards. I've still got that piece of paper, actually, those pieces of paper. And it's not, you know, it's good to go back and look and realise just how out of control my life was. You know, like, for example, financial, I'd run out of money 3 days after payday and be borrowing money off my wife, and then come payday, I'd pay her back, and then a few days later I'd be back in the same spot. And I wasn't able to contribute money towards shared holidays and things like that. In fact, I wasn't even involved in any of the planning of them, things like that. So that was an example. Work, I'd be missing days at work because I'd be hungover. I started to get warnings at work for not turning up, and also, yeah, just, you know, not being there. One time I was actually away for work and I missed three flights because I slept in. And that cost the company hundreds of dollars. And again, like, you know, I didn't get a warning for that, but I came very close. So these were sort of specific examples that I had of how my life was unmanageable, even though, you know, while I was drinking at the time, I would have thought, oh, it's fine, you know, like, this is just part of the, you know, I'm entitled to this. It's not a big issue. But when I came in the second time around, I was able to look at myself and start working on the steps, part of which were looking at my character defects, because I thought that putting the drink down, I'd just go back to being this awesome guy called Dan who everyone would know, you know, would love. Turns out that it wasn't just when I was drunk that I'd behave badly, and I actually had to work on my character and ask God to remove the defects of character. And God has removed many of my defects of character, but this is something that's ongoing, and it'll never stop. But my life now is it didn't take long for my life to start getting better, and but you know, before long I was starting to, you know, like when I first came in, I wanted to go to step nine, which was basically making amends. I wanted to say sorry to everybody, but there's a reason why that's step nine and not step one. So I worked through the process of the steps with a sponsor and then with another sponsor, and eventually I was able to get to step nine and actually make my amends. And that was actually more than just saying sorry. It's actually I'd borrowed money from people, not paid them back, things like that. So I had to actually go and pay them back as well, not just say sorry. And all of this basically helped repair some of the damaged relationships that I'd had with friends, with family, old work colleagues, things like that. And I was able to, I remember in my early days, as a drinker, walking down Cuba Mall, and I'd notice people looking at me and they're sort of like laughing at me, and I didn't know why, and I figured it was probably because I'd been misbehaving outside, you know, out when I was drinking, and people had recognised me, and it could see that I was just like a, you know, that's the idiot that was playing up last week, you know. And once I stopped drinking, I felt as though I was able to walk around and hold my head a bit high and look people in the eye and not worry about, you know, what people were looking at me for, because I was able to account for all my behaviour because I was sober all the time. Nowadays, you know, it's been quite a few years now since all this happened. You know, I'm now in my 50s, and I've had, like, so many amazing things happen to me in sobriety. Like, you know, I've formed a band of AA members, and we performed at an AA convention. I've been doing this radio show. I've done things like I've built a deck, which I never would have done. You know, I've started a business. All these incredible things have happened to me, and they wouldn't have happened had I been drinking. In fact, I'm not quite sure where I'd be. I may not even be alive because I've had some health issues as well, possibly related to drinking, probably related to drinking. But my health certainly improved since I've stopped drinking. Nowadays, I try and pray and meditate every day. I don't always remember, but I do when I do remember. And I try and keep in touch with other members of AA. I try and do my bit to help others. And I go to regular meetings, and I've got a home group. And I also do service. Like one of the services I do now at my home group is I make sure that the milk and bickies are there. That's how I know we've got such good bickies, because I buy them every week. I'm very satisfied with my life these days, and just to wake up every morning with a clear head and a clear conscience, it's honestly worth it. Like, it's been a few years now. I really don't think I'll go back to drinking, because I feel as though it would make everything in my life worse pretty much instantly. Like, it wouldn't take long for people to lose their trust in me. Another thing I've been doing in sobriety is, I mentioned the music thing, but I've formed several bands and played live, and tomorrow I've got the biggest gig I've ever played, and it's just like, it's these opportunities wouldn't have come along as a drinker, so I'm just really grateful that AA was there for me when I decided I wanted to come back. And so my job now is to try and pass on what I've been given to people that are new, and newcomers are really the lifeblood of AA, because it's an amazing amount of people that do have issues with alcohol, and they don't manage to come into AA, or if they do, they don't stick around. So for those of us that do come in and do stick around, it's like we're such a tiny minority, but like there's just the rewards are just, it's, I can't describe just how good it is, and just how, like, I just never want to go back, I'll do everything I can to not drink and go back to that life that I had. And it's actually not that hard. It's, saying a few prayers, helping others, going to meetings, which I enjoy anyway. And that's more or less it. And just trying to live a good life, apologise when I've done something wrong, admit, put my hand up and admit when I've made a mistake. And, that could be in all walks of life, family, business, relationships, all of those. And the thing is, I don't have to do it alone. Like, I'm doing it through Alcoholics Anonymous with fellows. We're all doing it together. I've got a sponsor now where, I help him, he helps me. And we can work through any issues together, it's great. I'm happy. I'll leave it there. So thanks for asking me to share, David.
Thanks, Dan. This was really good hearing from you, hearing your story as opposed to you being the host. I'm David. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the host of this Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Now, I think I can give you a little bit of my own story, how I came to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. My GP, bless you, Emma, if you're listening, was very concerned about my drinking, because all I used to do was drink from morning, early in the morning, till late at night, and it was just completely unremarkable to me. I didn't think there was any problem at all. Anyway, Emma became quite concerned and had me she told me one evening that I had to go straight from her surgery to Wellington Hospital, where she'd booked me in. And I eventually followed her advice, and I did so, and I got out there, and the doctors in Wellington Hospital were quite alarmed about the condition that I was in, and stuck a tube in my side, and out of it came, they measured it, 7 litres of a fluid, which I was told was had been caused by a complete, you know, failure of all the various abdominal organs. And that if I, they told me there that if I had any more to drink, I would just die. One more glass would kill me. And anyway, Emma was quite concerned about that and wanted to get me, help. And so she got on to an organisation called Care NZ, which helps people with various addiction problems. And they told her, well, we can't be of any help because you have to be actively drinking to come to Care NZ. And if this guy stopped, even if it's only for the last 3 days, he's not eligible to have the treatment there. So she got on to Wellington Hospital. Again, they have a ward in there. I can't remember the name of the ward. Anyway, for people with these addiction problems. And they told her the same thing. Well, no, I've actually stopped drinking since I went into Wellington Hospital, and so I can't get help from that ward there. And there's some kind of drug you can get that helps you to stop drinking, or at least it makes you unable to drink. And antabuse, I think it's called. So Emma got onto a specialist to ask about, well, can I take this antabuse? And they said, well, no, my liver was so far gone that I can't possibly take antabuse that would have the same effect as alcohol on it and kill me. So Emma was at quite a loss of what to do. But what did I do? I noticed that there was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on Saturday at the Salvation Army headquarters across the road from Wellington Hospital. And I wandered into there on the Saturday morning and was just welcomed by all these wonderful people in there who had similar drinking problems to me. I, you know, wasn't the only person like that. There were, you know, dozens of them there, and some of them who'd been coming for weeks, some for months, some for years. And the one thing that they had was that, you know, they had the message that, you know, the help that you get from Alcoholics Anonymous can help you stop drinking, and you don't have to worry about tomorrow, next week, next year. It's just, one day at a time. One doesn't have to drink today, and all the people at AA will help you not to drink today. Well, ever since then, I've not been drinking today. And, I'm actually still alive and having a thoroughly good life of gainful employment. And doing decks, as Dan was just saying. I'm no longer the floor show at parties. In fact, I get invited to parties these days. And in the olden days of drinking, the invitations became less and less and less. And my family are very happy with me. It's I get asked several times a week at the family, goodness, isn't it your club tonight? Would you like $5 to help you get on the way and go there? I'm not sure whether they want me to keep on going to my meetings or just to have some peace and quiet in the house to stop me broadcasting at home. And now I do it on air. And so I can thoroughly recommend Alcoholics Anonymous for, really helping virtually anybody who wants to stop drinking and can't. And it certainly worked for me and many, many other people who I've known. You can contact AA by phone, which is 0800-229-6757. That's 0800-229-6757. Or on the AA website, aa.org.nz. And now we've finally come to the end of the meeting. So thank you very much, Dan, for coming here. And we shall close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. We'll start with, as we do with any AA meeting. So God.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.